All right, I'm really excited to share this with all of you guys because this is so deeply in my heart now. So, I'm nervous. So the two organizations that I was working with while in Ghana are Matthew Cares Foundation and Mawalulu Youth Network. Mawalulu means God's greatness or the largeness of God. So these kids in the picture are from Matthew Cares Foundation. This is the school where I spent the majority of my time. Classes from preschool all the way up to the seventh grade, just way outside my normal comfort zone because I teach kindergarten. So lots of expansion in that. Matthew Cares Foundation was located in Budabaram, which is a Liberian refugee camp. And then Mawalulu is in Accra, which is right on the coast of Ghana. So Mawalulu was about 45 minutes to an hour from Matthew Cares Foundation. So three nights a week, I would take a taxi, take and go an hour into the city so I could work with Ghanaian children as well as Liberian children and teach in an after-school program, which I'll go more into. So that's where I was, Ghana. The majority of the people I worked with were Liberians, though, which I'll talk to in a second why they were there. Anyway, this is Cape Coast Castle. So this is actually the original spot where the Europeans landed in Ghana. So this was a huge part where slavery was. They call it a castle, which I really have a hard time with. That's why I have it in quotes, because it's where the slaves lived. So it was one man who came over and built this entire structure, and they all lived in the basement. And this is one of the worst places in Africa where the majority of the slaves died, and just a really horrible, horrible story. And it's crazy because in Ghana, the language is English. The national language is now English, and the national religion is Christianity, both of which were brought over from England during times of slavery. So it's just really interesting to think about how it was something that was forced upon them that they now like so deeply believe in. And it's, in my mind, it's kind of a crazy perspective they have, but ultimately they believe that God saw that they were on the wrong path and he sent the Europeans over to get them back in line and to follow faith and believe in Christianity. And so it's like this kind of weird perspective on slavery that they slightly appreciate it happened to them in a way. Like it's super complicated, but they believe it was a way to bring them to God. So it's really interesting. I had a hard time talking to them about it because I was like, what? This is just some pictures from a national park. The last 3 days there, I wanted to see something because all I did was work like crazy, crazy hours, 7:30 in the morning till 3:30 at night. And then 3 days a week, I'd travel an hour away and teach an after-school program for 2 hours. And then the 2 days that I was still at Matthew Cares Foundation, I was teaching workshops to the teachers. And then on Sundays, I was teaching adult programs. So every day except for Saturday, I was working from like morning until night. Just crazy. So the last 3 days I took off and traveled a little bit. This is this like beautiful jungle area that has, no one's allowed to do anything to it. And there's these rope bridges that run through the whole area. So it's fascinating. You can get lost literally for hours in it. So the after school program, Mawalulu Youth Network. So I'm going to just quickly touch on this. I really want to focus on Matthew Cares Foundation, but so these children are Ghanaian. So while I was working there, I was working with class 6. I did not get a choice. I was so nervous to be full-time working with class 6, sixth grade, because they're just a lot older than what I'm used to. But so this is an enrichment program. So these children, had I maybe gone to this program first and only experienced this program, I probably would have a different experience with it. But since I experienced the refugee camp and then this one, like, these kids have families and, you know, they have school, they have an educational system, they have clothes, they get fed, they get water, they have their basic needs met. And so this is just an enrichment program that's 3 nights a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So it was really fun. I did art and science with this group. And yoga. Of course I did yoga with every single class at both places. And they really got into it, teaching them actually about yoga, the words, helping them understand the language and how Sanskrit has depth and meaning in every single sound means something, and teaching them simple things and then saying a word and having them translate it. And they got it. Like, they're smart. So that was great. That's the staff in the bottom corner. The two guys in the far right are brothers. And all four of them grew up in this area. And they have all their basic needs met, but it's still a very poor region. I mean, it's still nothing compared to what we have. So they grew up in it, and they wanted to give back, and they wanted something different for the children. So they started this organization. There's six of them, and they're all best friends, and they do it as like a side job. But they've been going for 6 years now, and they're federally funded, and they're a licensed organization, a nonprofit, and they're doing really good. They're doing great things. They work with the university and have college students come in and everything. The last 2 weeks, I wanted to experience a homestay, and I slightly didn't want to stay in the refugee camp anymore, if I'm being totally honest. So these are some of the kids I was staying with. The little boy with the bandage on his head, Joel, was my alarm clock every morning. Seriously. So I stayed with in one room with three women my age and then two children. And this little boy, from day one, I didn't even know him yet, in his underwear every time too, would crawl in my bed, which is just like a little mattress on the ground, and he would like rub my cheek, and he'd be like, "It's time for school, madam. It's time for school." Mind you, school is like, I don't need to get up till like 6:30. So an hour and a half earlier than I wanted every morning. And it was super sweet. So it was like 50% I loved it. 50% I was like, get out of my room. But these boys are all really close to my heart. This is all a family. They're all brothers and siblings. I Skype them once a week. They have my heart still as well. There was like 32 people who lived in this one home area. You walk in through a gate, and then there's four doors on each side, and they're their apartments, but they're just like a bed. You walk in, and it's just a bed, and then two people sleep on the floor, two people sleep in the bed, and then you go next door, and there's four, five, six people in that room as well. So all of these children, I don't even have the adults, just all the children. all these children were staying with me in there. So beautiful. And a lot of them are orphans that the family actually took in. About half the children aren't their own, that they've found on the streets or found in the local villages and provided more for them. So they're a really beautiful family. So Budabaram is a Liberian refugee camp. So in 1989, Liberia entered into this really great war, and a large portion of the people came to Ghana to seek refuge. The Ivory Coast is between, I don't know if you guys remember on the map, it's Liberia, the Ivory Coast, and Ghana. The Ivory Coast wasn't accepting refugees, so they had to travel through this country that was almost four times the size of theirs to get to Ghana. When they got there, Ghana supported them. They gave them a huge piece of land. They gave them materials to build housing. They gave them food. They gave them water. They let them set up a life there. And then in the year 2000, the war ended in Liberia, and half of the refugees returned. Less than a year and a half later, the war started again. And because of the experience that group had that had returned, they shared, if we go to Ghana, we have shelter, we have food, we have water. It's safe for us there. So three times as many refugees returned to Ghana. So this camp has over 45,000 refugees inside of it. And when they returned, the government funding had stopped, because when the war ended in 2000, they said it was, you can keep the land, but we're not giving you anything else. So three times as many people returned, and they no longer had anything provided for them. Luckily, at that point, some of them had been there for 10 years. So there are some homes. There are, you can see, like some little shops. In those 10 years, they were to build some things up off of the government funding that they had received. So when the people came back, they were so kind. They were sharing their spaces. Families were combining. They were offering their huts. It's a huge community. It's amazing. And what I learned really quickly is that it's going to be hard for any of them to leave the camps, because they do view themselves as such a family, that the moment any family makes any money, they give it to everybody around them. You know, they get enough money to feed their family, and they see that every single family around them doesn't have food, so they cook a huge meal and they give it all away. And so that's what they're all doing. The moment any of them make money, they give it to everybody else, and they give it to everybody else. And so it's really tricky. And the Ghanaian government has a law that 95% of their jobs have to go to Ghanaians. So these people are trying to get jobs. They're trying to do something different with their lives, but they can't. And they don't have any money. So they're just stuck in this limbo space. And what Jane was explaining at a Sunday service, how the children that are born at these camps are not, they're not citizens of anywhere because they're not Ghanaian. They're Liberian, but they weren't born in Liberia. So they're just stuck. So you meet these children and it's like heartbreaking because you see their future. You see that, you just see what their life's going to be. It's heavy. So Matthew Cares Foundation is this incredible school. And it's one man, actually, who came over in the original group of refugees and was able to start an internet cafe. He started with one computer. He has 15 computers now. People come from off the camp to visit him. Every single penny he makes goes to this school. He funds this school on his own. It started with like 20 children and now there's almost 200 of them and they can't accept anymore because they don't have the food to feed them. They don't have the space to teach them. But every morning, this bottom left picture, they do prayer for an hour. They sing praise and give thanks to God for simply being alive. You know, I've traveled all over the world and I've never met people who are so thankful, who have literally nothing. And they wake up every single morning and they give thanks. Like you walk up to them and it's like, how are you today? And they're like, I'm alive. Thank you to God. Like every single thing is like, praise to God. I'm here. Like, it's incredible. Their faith is, but you know, if they didn't have that faith, I couldn't imagine where they would be at. So yoga. So what was I doing there? It all started at the Innovative Education Symposium here at Sunrise Ranch. This is what sparked it in me. I had applied years ago to potentially volunteer at an African school, got the job, the country became unsafe and I couldn't go. And then I just kind of dropped it. You know, I just didn't think about it. All I heard was Africa's dangerous, and then I just didn't think about it. Went to that symposium. Anyone who was there, I was like weeping. Like huge movement inside of me that I had to do more. I had to do more. So I went home from that weekend workshop, searched online all this stuff, had met some connections, started talking to people, and found out about this school. And for over a year, they were trying to find somebody to essentially come in and teach their teachers. So three people in the entire staff have a college education. The remainder of them are simply adults old enough to teach that know, sort of know, English. So they don't have an education. They don't know what they're doing. They're trying their best. You know, the wage is $16 a month. That's what the salary is for those teachers, which really is nothing even there. That's nothing if they have children and families and any of that. So my main goals were classroom management is what they really wanted me to teach them. And then that was my goal. Transitioning them from fear-based learning to compassion-based education, because that's what I'm about. That's literally my life mission, is to love them into wanting a better life. So I taught a lot about what makes a great teacher, and these are just the things that I believe make a great teacher. So building strong relationships with your students, holding high expectations of them, because if you do it in a sense of love, they want to meet those expectations, which is incredible. You just have to give them the space. You have to believe in them and then give them the space to reach those goals. Show them that you care, that they matter. Have a sense of humor. Be able to laugh at yourself, especially because you make a lot of mistakes. And as a teacher, you make a lot of mistakes. Be knowledgeable. Keep learning. Continuously learn and expand your abilities. Take risks. Teaching the children that it's okay to try something different, and sometimes you're going to fail, and sometimes you're going to succeed, and it's okay. Stay consistent, develop a routine. This was big. The teachers would literally beat them if they were late for class, but then some days the teachers would show up 20 minutes late. And I'm like, you have to stay consistent as well. You can't set rules for them and then not follow the exact same rules. You're teaching them that they don't matter to you, essentially. They have to show up for you, but you don't have to show up for them. You're breaking down everything we're trying to do here, guys. Communication with the parents and the students in two ways. Recognizing the importance of having that communication with the parents. But in Africa, in Ghana, it's also recognizing maybe when it's important not to have the conversation. Like, the child was falling asleep that day. Do you have that conversation with the parent, knowing that that might mean they're going to have to go home and they're going to get beat and they're going to have more chores and it's just going to set them up to have a harder day tomorrow? You know, so really thinking and knowing the families and knowing you have to, especially there, you really, really have to communicate and understand the dynamics. Make learning fun. Empathize with your students. Like, realize that half these children are orphans, you know, that they haven't been fed. Of course they're falling asleep. Their needs aren't met. They are trying so hard to stay awake, but they can't. Help them discover their passion and their purpose. That's the entire purpose of a teacher, I believe, is to help your students find their passion and their purpose. And they don't do that. It's just trying to get them to retain information. But it's like, no, we're here to empower them and believe in them and remind them that they have something to bring. And then vary your instruction. And I'm not going to go into this in detail, but this was a big thing of what I taught in my workshops, that children learn differently. There's proven 7 different learning styles, and we all have the ability to do all of them. However, in the majority of countries, we teach this, linguistics, written and spoken. This is in the order of how people learn. So this is how common these are. This is one of the least common, because these are kind of a separate section. But anyway, so we spent the first couple weeks learning what these are. Learning every little detail about what it is and how children learn like that. Then we spent the next few weeks learning how to recognize that in their students. I would sit in the classroom, they'd sit in the classroom, we'd observe their learning, write down how they were doing things, compare notes to see what their learning styles were. So teaching them what they were, how to recognize them, and then the last few weeks was teaching them how to actually teach to those learning styles. Okay, so you have a child who learns through physical and intellectual, like, teaching them skills, like, do this in the classroom and do this and take them outside. Let them touch a tree instead of drawing a picture of a tree on a chalkboard. Like, there's so many tools if you just get outside the classroom. So teaching them to just expand and understand that it's so different than, and they just don't know. They don't know these things. So they were really, for the most part, thankful. This is the staff. They're amazing. Most of these are teachers. So it was hard when I first got there. You know, I didn't realize the weight of what I was doing. I had realized a couple days before going that this was bigger than me. I had realized this was my first time traveling for something besides me wanting something. It was for something else, something larger. But I didn't realize the size of it. You know, in my mind, I don't know, I pictured like a big support team, even though I knew I didn't have a support team. And like, I pictured we'd be able to communicate better, even though like really, I probably knew we couldn't really communicate very well. So I just had this different idea of what it was going to be. And, you know, and I landed and I got there and it was, I got there on a Sunday, got to school on Monday, went to my first class, class 6 with this man, George. Scary man, by the way. first class, class 6, mathematics. Also, mathematics is my, like, least subject. I'm really bad at math. I wasn't in the class for 5 minutes, and one of the boys in the second row, who I'd already learned is an orphan and doesn't have a home, I'd already learned this, and, like, they pointed him out to me, and he was falling asleep, and the teacher walked behind him and hit him so hard in the back of the head that his face smashed into the desk and he got a bloody nose. And then he continued to be in his face and tell him, "You are stupid, you are worthless, you're going nowhere, you're never going to leave this camp. Like, why do you even bother coming to school?" Just like, whew. And like, that was when I realized like what I was doing. I had to leave the classroom. I was just shattered. You know, my first degree is actually in social work, specifically child abuse. So literally, the opposite of everything I've ever learned and believe in. So, yeah, I walked out of that classroom. I was crying, and it was like the weight hit me. So for the next 3 days, I was just like a shell of a human being. It was hard. It was like shattering my heart and my soul and just like breaking me down. And I'd cry myself to sleep every night for the first 3 days. I was definitely the smallest version of myself I've ever been in my entire life. You know, going to sleep with the most self-defeating thoughts of, who do you think you are? Why did you think you could do this? You're only one person. This is so much bigger than you. Just every negative thought that could possibly come was hitting me so hard. And then I'd go to school the next day. I'd see these things. My heart would shatter deeper. And it was this cycle for a few days. But something shifted on day four. I woke up and I felt lighter. And I had this realization of, you're here. So you have a choice now. You can either offer what you can, try your best and make a difference, or you can do nothing. But what's the worst that happens? Nothing changes, but at least you tried. Like this whole thing of just change your attitude, do it differently. And so I went into that day just like, okay, you know, I would see things like that and then I would try to correct it without being overpowering in the classroom. You know, like they each have a stick of dried sugar cane and they call it caning. Like they literally will be like, pay attention or I'll cane you, and they'll smack them in the head or smack them in the arm, like constantly hitting, constantly belittling, just heavy. So for the first week I just observed, I took notes, then I started transitioning into the classrooms and leading and showing them different styles and showing them different ways to do things. Then we did group work. For the next couple weeks, we would work together and co-teach while they tried to implement some of the things I was teaching them. You know, as time went on, they started listening and they started accepting and they started asking me questions. They started coming to me, especially the younger teachers. Gifty, it's her first job and she wants to be a good teacher. Not once did she hit a student while I was there. Not once did she call them any names. Like, she laughed with them and played with them and believed in them and was like, yeah, amazing. So, yeah, they started coming to me, asking questions, listening. I'd see them go to hit a kid and, like, stop for a second and, like, reflect on the behavior. Because that's something I talked about, too. Like, is the weight of what they did wrong actually worth the punishment that you're giving them? Like, he's looking out the window for, like, 2 seconds. Do you think he really deserves to be smacked in the back of the head? Like, so making them just think about it and see it a little bit differently. And then it started to get easier. They started receiving me, they started listening, and we started moving through our time together. So these are just some of my students. Like I said, I taught preschool through eighth. So these are the kindergartners. Those kids on the right side are preschool. That top one in the middle is Blessing. I love him so much. He has my heart. Some of you know the story, but it's in progress. I love him and I want to adopt him. Wow. But I don't know if I'm doing it. But anyway. kindergarten one, preschool. This next group is the group I spent the most time with. Kindergarten two in class one. They have such personalities. Jeff, that little boy in the corner, is like star of the show always. but you can see it in their eyes. Like they're so full of love. And so thankful, and just, I have, like, never met children that loved me more. The second they met me, just, like, hugging me and, like, kissing my arms and, like, kissing my cheeks and holding my hands and just, like, what I do to you guys sometimes, I'll, like, walk up and just, like, rub you. They were doing that to me, and I was like, yeah. You were like, I know it. then this is class two. So I was with these kids a lot as well. That's James in the middle. He thinks he's a ninja. So I have probably 50 pictures of this child, and every single picture he's doing something like that. So when he wants to grow up to be a ninja. So he told me I have to learn martial arts while I'm here, and when I return to him, I'm going to teach him. So I'm taking kickboxing in 2 weeks. So I'm really going to do it. I made an agreement. class three, they're not all in this picture that day, but so class ones, two, and three were the ones I spent the majority of the time with. This next slide is like group pictures of class four. 4, 5, and 6. And for some reason, I didn't take a picture of class 7, but he's in class 7, so he's representing his class now.
He has a school bell or something.
That's the bell to ring between classes. So he watches the clock, and as the hour hits, he'll run through the courtyard ringing his bell to let the kids know it's time to switch classes. Yeah, that's their bell. They did a cultural night before I left to show me a piece of their history and their culture and share themselves with me. It was so beautiful and amazing. And they kept making me come up. I was like, they like pulled me up and like trying to make me dance in front of like all 100 students. And I was like so uncomfortable. But they sang to me and it was like all for me. Like it was them like giving thanks and love. And they gifted me like 20 African dresses. And they don't have anything. So I'm like, guys, stop giving me stuff. I don't... But it was beautiful. I have to receive, so it's good. I tried to get some group photos. They worked well, as you can tell. Trying to get all those kids to... Well, and this was, too, transitioning from, like, intense, extreme discipline to compassion-based was... It's going to be rough. Like, I left them being like, you got this. Good luck. Like, going to have a hard go at it for a few months as you... teach them a different form of discipline. So the last workshop that I did, the last day that I was at the school, I just like went to it with this idea of just tell it like it is. Like no holding back, just speak everything that you're feeling. Like what's the worst that happens? They don't want you to come back anymore? Well, then fine, you're not supposed to be here. Offer what you know is truth for yourself. So as the weeks went by, whenever I'd bring something up, the response was often, almost always, well, this is Africa. We do things differently. This is Africa. This isn't America. You know, and like that was the response. And at the beginning, I was like, okay, yeah, this is Africa. And like as time would go by, I'd be like, eh, but does it have to be Africa? Like, eh, you know, like really processing what they were saying. And so I went into my last workshop and the most experience of just like something coming through me I've ever had in my entire life. It's like 45 minutes long and like it was crazy. So I went into it and it was just like, okay guys, yes, this is Africa. You do things differently, but don't use Africa as an excuse. Don't limit what Africa can be. In the United States, we used to hit our students. We used to call them names. We used to do these things, and it did not work. And we changed. You guys are here. Like, I remember saying that. You guys are here because of war and violence. Was it the answer? No, it wasn't. So why would violence be the answer with your children and with your students? Do something different. Make Africa different. You want this to be a different school, you want this to be a different place, you have the opportunity and the choice to make it different. So do it differently. And like, just, it was incredible. And just, guys, come on, like, you have the chance here. Let's change this school. Let's change how Africa teaches. You can be the school that makes a difference. You're one school, but these 200 children have hundreds of friends and know hundreds of people who are going to share that experience. And you know teachers, and it will expand if you believe in yourselves. If you want it to be different, make it different. And that teacher from day one, that scary man who not once came to me, was the first person to stand up and look me in the eyes and say, I will never hit another one of my students. I will never call them another name. I will never belittle them again. And every single teacher and every single staff member in that room stood up and made that agreement with me. So I went to this, starting as this smallest, tiniest little version of myself that I have ever been, and realized by the end of this that one person... literally one person can change the entire world. Like, this is huge. Like, what we did together was huge. And I went from, it's crazy, the self-doubt and the negative talk and the way we can beat ourselves up. And then the ability when we actually let ourselves come through and let our hearts show and let our passions shine, the change that we can make, when it comes from your heart, when it comes from your heart, the change that we can make is beyond anything. I never imagined I could do that. But we did it. Together. We did it together. So that was incredible. And they do want me to come back. So what's next? So I'm starting a fundraiser. It's, you know, that statement of you can give a man a fish or you can feed him to fish, or teach him to fish. Obviously I want to teach them to fish. That's the ultimate goal. But right now, none of their basic needs are met. So I'm trying to do a fundraiser to get them food, get them water. I want to pay the teachers. There's three teachers who left while I was there because they hadn't been paid in 2 months. So get them a little bit of funding so they can just get on their feet again. So that's a goal with that. I want to feed them. I want to feed them. It's like so hard. While I was there, we implemented this. So I was trying to think of ideas of how can we get money coming into this school? How can you guys support yourselves? So they have a couple computers, and they have three teachers who have a college education. So they started advertising for an IT school. And they had people coming from off the camp to come to this IT school. And they sent me a picture. They have 17 people in that school now. In like 3 weeks, they did that. So money coming in, teaching people how to use simple things on a computer, but that they want to know. Adult night school classes, so teaching English. Just any way to utilize the space and utilize their knowledge to get money coming in. I've been working with an organization that is in three different African countries right now that makes compostable toilets. So I want them, they're going to build compostable toilets in this refugee camp. Because right now, they're literally going to the bathroom in plastic bags. So you'll walk through this camp and there will be piles of plastic bags full of human shit the size of houses. Because the homes are so close together that they don't even have space to like dig it and bury it. It's not an option. So giving them different resources. And this organization is working with another organization that has all these like micro little dudes that can go into the waste and actually make it reusable as compost. So trying to get both those organizations to go in so then they can actually use this. So then they can garden and grow things, which is the next part. And maybe a lovely Amanda might come with me and teach them how to start a simple garden. Give them seeds so that they can be growing their own vegetables and taking care of these plants so that they have food to take care of themselves. Jewel actually reached out to LifeStraw for me, and I reached out to Steripen and Sawyer, which are, they're all different. Can't think of the word. It cleans water, purifies water. So getting them tools to purify the water, because the water is very, very dirty, and they just drink it. They don't have any options. Talk to Goodwill and the Ark. They throw away a third of their donations every year. So getting them to ship them to my beautiful children and families in the refugee camp. Talking to an organization that does river nets that catches all of the trash so it's easier for them, because they want a cleaner system. They just don't have any way to take care of it. They don't have a way to take care of the trash or the recycling or any of that. So it just gets thrown because there's nothing else for them to do. So making it easier for them to take care of it. And in working with some of the parents too, I got them to start collecting plastic bottles because they make like fruit drinks. And I'm like, go collect all the plastic bottles laying all over, clean them out, reuse them. Like we can use the materials we have. Reach out to Trevor Hall. This is huge. Talk to his publicist. It's not a yes yet, but it's going to be a yes. I want him to do a benefit concert because he lives in Boulder. Donating a part of the proceeds, but not even the money. It's the awareness. Trevor Hall. Whew. So Trevor Hall is going to do a benefit concert. See that. Picture it, guys. to raise some money and to raise awareness so people just know what it's like. And people who, I feel like there's so many people who want to give back and want to offer, but they don't know how. They don't know where it's going. They don't know what they're doing. So giving them a chance to give back and to make a difference in the world. I'm talking to organizations in Denver. I reached out actually to Linda here, you're somewhere, trying to see if we can get their crafts sold here, making connections where the parents that make art and jewelry and paintings and clothes, giving them connections here in the States so that, and I can be the middleman because I'm going to be going to Africa every year now. This is definitely on my life path. Bringing their artwork so there's money coming back to these families, teaching them to fish. And then this is huge, too. We're opening a second school in Liberia. It was probably a weekend when I thought of this. So they don't have support because they're Liberians in Ghana. But if we can open a second school in Liberia for all of the refugees that are there, they will get government support. And it's already approved. Like, they've already been working on it since they've been gone. So opening a second school in Liberia for the refugees there, getting the government support to feed the children, get the textbooks, pay the teachers, and having, there's going to be enough money that we can link this school in Ghana to this school so where they can share funds. And so some of that money can come to this original school and help support the basic things that this school needs. Like, the lunch program and teaching, paying the teachers. So that is what I did, guys. Yeah. Thank you.